When Captain Marvel entered the theater, the praises of many viewers could be heard. Except from the guys who didn't feel a thrill because they felt Brie Larson once said something shrill. She made a point, but it came off crude, which led to some guys saying something rude. When Captain Marvel entered theaters.
Sci-Fi Malady, Symptom 111, Captain Controversy. It's possible that this is the final episode of Sci-Fi Malady ever. I don't know if I've ever been more afraid of a movie review. Because, here's the thing.
Then why are we doing it?
I did a quick rant on this, and I'll say this. It's very tough to talk about this movie and the controversy around it without somebody being upset with what you're saying. And that's, look, if you come off and you take the view that all of the ultra progressive left wing would be happy with, then there's going to be people who are really upset at you on the right wing. If you take a view that's going to make them happy, then the left wing's mad at you. If you take a view in the middle on this controversy, then you're just a spineless sissy who has, oops, I'm already in trouble.
Yeah, you've pissed off the left and the right already. Well done.
Just a spineless wimp who's afraid to have an opinion on this film. So, but Captain Marvel, Avengers Endgame was out yesterday. None of us have seen it yet, but the last I'll be seeing it tomorrow. Thomas is seeing it Monday. Rage Master is seeing it tomorrow. The most recent movie before Endgame was Captain Marvel.
It was released up, so you had to basically watch it to see the Endgame. Well, correct. At least that was the idea.
Yeah, I guess you probably could have avoided it and not been too far off in the plot. As far as the plot, the story.
Let me make except for the fact that you would be going, where did this person come from?
Yes.
You could probably honestly just read a quick summary and be okay. It's very helpful to have this story, but if you only get the briefest of detail, you're probably
the
okay.
Only thing you need for Captain Marvel for Endgame, most likely, I could be wrong, but the most important thing about it is going to be the introduction to Captain Marvel.
Yeah, yes. Just a brief summary would suffice to get you into Endgame. It'd be kind of like missing Ant-Man and Wasp. You'd be okay.
You're better off for it.
Hey, that movie was pretty good, actually.
I watched Ant-Man and the Wasp, and it was everything I ever thought it was going to be. It was 2 hours of my life I'll never get back, and I absolutely am angry at Marvel for stealing the 2 hours of my life with that hideously terrible film.
Oh, but Solo was okay.
Solo is a work of art compared to the awfulness that was Ant-Man and the piece of crap.
Wow.
Exposure to the Marvel Universe and you showed me Ant-Man and the Wasp, I would never watch another Marvel Cinematic Universe film again
Allowed to have their opinion.
Yeah, that's anyway. Your opinion, but
yeah. Anywho. It's horrible. But Captain Marvel, regardless of your opinion on this movie, regardless of what you think about this movie, it is a smashing box office success. It has made $1.096 billion. On a budget of between $152 and $175 million, undeniably a success. And we'll get into this later after we review the film, but I think it puts to bed the question of, will the Marvel Cinematic Universe watch a film with a female lead? The answer is a resounding yes, they will, and they don't care. The crying man babies didn't care. They showed up and watched the film.
Hang on. I got to say this right now, and this is true of any movie. Whenever I hear the box office surpassed whatever, big deal. Wait 5 minutes. The next movie that comes out is going to surpass that. The box office being broken now, the box office is perpetually broken. A movie about, I don't know, a pair of headphones on a table breaks the box office. So Who cares? Whenever I hear someone say, "Oh, this big movie that we marketed the right way and everybody got excited for, even for 5 minutes, just broke the box office." Hey, you know what else happened? The sun went up, came up, and went
it's
down.
It's pretty hard to make a movie that makes $1 billion.
They all break the box office. So what?
It's not the big deal is not about it breaking the box office. It's the actually making a sizable amount of money.
It was gonna do that. Don't look it up. They all do. Every time I look on something, all it does is say, "Oh, this movie's broken the box office. This movie's broken the box office."
38 films. See? 38 films have made $1 billion.
And 38 more will do so in the next 3 years.
Well, there is an argument to be said that, yes, more and more recent movies are breaking bigger box office numbers. Yes. And I've heard that argument. My comment, though, would be it is big enough of a deal that it did do a sizable.
It doesn't mean that you created an artistic masterpiece. And it doesn't mean that you've created something that 50 years from now people are going to be talking about. But it does mean that you created a financial success.
Which they did.
Oh, yeah. I'm not
financially, they
that.
Succeeded.
I just don't use that as a metric anymore.
So before we get into the controversy that you may or may not have heard about.
Let me see. If you are breathing, you've heard about it.
But before we get into that, let's actually have our thoughts about the film and kick off discussion that way, where we try to talk about that and then get to the controversy so that we don't appear, you know, get mired in that and then never get to actually reviewing this film. Now, I know the opinions in this room are going to vary wildly. I found the film to be an enjoyable 2 hours. Unlike Ant-Man and the Wasp, I was never bored with this film. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very interesting. It was a cosmic film.
It was.
And I like seeing a little bit more of that expansion. I felt it fit very much in the vein of a Guardians of the Galaxy or a Thor movie. I felt that it blended very well with it had that type of feel. I felt it was Marvel living in that zone where Marvel does very well with, where you've got the tongue-in-cheek humor and it's a little over-the-top humor. There are fight scenes. Look, there's absolutely an over-the-top scene where she's just punching through the entire alien fleet like it doesn't exist on her own at the end.
She can do that in the comics. Right. That's not a big thing.
It's very overpowered, but it didn't matter because it's a comic book film and they're supposed to be overpowered. But I also felt that it was interesting to go back in time at Earth, in Earth in the 1980s. See a 90s. Young Nick Fury. 90s. It was the 90s. Okay.
Made me feel old because I was like, ah, crap. Remember when you used to watch movies that were set in the 60s and your parents would be like, "Oh, remember that?" And you felt like, oh, at least.
Well, I mean.
Now it's like, I like that. I'm looking at things going, "I remember that."
Well,
I mean,
it started with the Blockbuster. I mean, it started there and you went, oh boy.
Just everything. They did a good job in the appearance of that. They nailed the 90s look and the soundtrack and everything else. But it just was one of those moments where I felt bad because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not like my parents when they were watching a movie set in their childhood. Ah, crap.
I love seeing the backstory of Nick Fury. I love the fact that the story behind why he misses an eye is because the cat scratched his eye out.
Okay,
Flurkin disguised as a cat.
I'm going to be the only person in the world, and I know we're on the positives here, but I got to get it out because it's a minor point, but it's going to bug me if I forget. I'm the only person that thought the cat was stupid. I really must be the only. Everyone else is like, the cat.
The cat is stupid, but it's hilarious.
Stupid in a way that made me roll my eyes like, really? Plus the thing about, that's how Nick Fury gets the Cosmic Cube. It barfs it out. You know, we already had the explanation of how he got the Cosmic Cube or the Tesseract. It was because Howard Stark found it, gave it to the SSR, who became S.H.I.E.L.D. So, that's how Project Pegasus got it. Okay, fine. But it was just like, that's how Nick got it. You know, they already had an explanation for that. I was the only person I know that thought the cat was dumb. It didn't kill the movie. It didn't hurt it at all. It was just like, come on, really? The cat?
I felt it was fun. I felt that the cat fit with the overall theme feel that they were going for. They knew that they were trying to sneak in a couple more powerful messages than they usually do in a Marvel Cinematic Universe theme, which we'll get to in a bit.
I think
the cat, and they went a little over the top of the jokes to say, it's hey, look, porg. We're still doing Marvel things.
It was the porg of this movie.
It had a little more substance than the porg. The porg was just there to look at Chewbacca and get eaten.
It had more substance, but it was still the porg of the movie.
Yeah, fair enough. It did what the porg was supposed to do.
There you go. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, okay.
Episode 8 wishes that the porgs were as successful as the cat.
Yes.
They tried. Lord help them, they tried.
But I guess my thought process on the whole movie is, I guess if I come back to one word to describe it, it was fun. It was fun. The pacing stayed high and it was well done. And ultimately, what was it, the best thing that Marvel has produced? No, there's better movies. It's not Thor Ragnarok. It's not as good as either the Guardian of the Galaxy movies.
It was way better than Iron Man 3. Light years better than that.
I will slightly disagree with you in the fun aspect for simple fact. I didn't see it as super. I walked out of it going meh, and I don't know if I would say fun. It was not bad by any stretch of imaginations for me, but yeah,
I mean, you got a scene where she goes to shoot her, and it's a Nerf gun by mistake. That's fun.
I'm sorry. There's certain things where I don't laugh at things like that.
You know,
I find it stupid. I mean,
jokes like that are starting to get a little boring to me. They've been done and they were funny, but they're the kind of jokes that run their course rather quickly. They're a quick burn effect. And I think when you have like Guardians of the Galaxy doing it in other films, it's kind of like,
my only point would be.
Didn't do anything. It didn't hurt, but it didn't do anything.
I'm going to jump to a different movie here. In Aquaman, there was a scene. Where you got the aliens and they are, underwater aliens or whatever, Atlanteans.
Uh-huh.
The one guy gets his helmet smashed and, he has to live underwater and there's a toilet.
Exactly.
Toilet
humor, get it?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, it was saw it coming a million miles away and to me it wasn't funny.
No.
Captain Marvel wasn't that bad. In the not funny aspect. I'm just using that as an example. There were points where I laughed and there were points where I rolled my eyes. So I'm just saying, overall, I walked out of there with some laughs and some scenes that made me, chuckle, laugh. I'm not saying it didn't. I'm just saying, overall, meh.
Scott, what was your highlight, your biggest highlight?
You put me right on the spot like that. I thought we had conversations about not putting people on the spot like that out of nowhere to come up with something. Scott, but apparently we need to have that
Scott,
again.
Scott, if you know anything about me, I'm a hypocritical failure in life. So just okay, fine. What was my favorite? You roll it around and I'll answer my favorite part. My favorite part was that for the most part, they got the Kree Empire right. I recognize that they're not going to make films for the comic book fan, but Kevin Feige has the ability to he is a fan of this, of the material, and you can see it. You can definitely see that he enjoys this work. He's like the Dave Filoni. He's as to Star Wars, or excuse me, as to Marvel as Dave Filoni is to Star Wars. And he was really interested in doing a good job. And he recognizes that although you can't just appease the fandom, because then the general movie going populace is going to walk away. But at the same time, you can't alienate them either, because at the end of the day, they're your safety net. And that's where you saw what would happen with Solo, that they cut against the grain of the fandom, which is your safety net. Are they the only ones you should appease? No, of course not. And in the Marvel, in the comic book movies, you probably shouldn't aim to appease them first at all. But you should definitely not make enemies of them either, because if the movie tanks, they're the ones that are at least going to make it cross the finish line. And Kevin Feige knows that. So even though the Kree Empire is not exactly the same, even though it's been tweaked, He clearly did as well as he could to connect it to the comics so that it wasn't bad. It wasn't like you're looking at it going, whoa, wait, you're totally wrong. Mar-Vell is actually a hero, was actually a Captain Marvel male, the first precursor of it. Why they changed it to a scientist, I don't know, but it's what they did. And then I also like how not just the fact that they kept that part of the story intact, but that it feeds into the other movies. I don't remember the name of the character, but one of them winds up, Roland is in there, or Ronan, excuse me, Ronan the Accuser, who was the bad guy in Guardians 1. And one of the minions of Jude Law's character winds up being an adept of Ronan, and you see that interest early on, and Ronan kind of becoming who he becomes by the time Guardians rolls around. And I appreciate that continuity very, very much, because, and that's one of those things that's nice about Kevin Feige, that he keeps that attention to continuity and detail. And same thing with Captain Marvel, the way they portrayed her origin and what have you. A lot of that was very similar to the comics, which I can appreciate a lot. So that was, for me, the highlight. As a comic fan, that was the nice bonus for me.
So I'll say this. I think this is part of the reason why this movie is a good, solid, fun, above average effort, but it's not great. It's not the best that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has to offer, because as I'm sitting here for the whole time you're doing that, trying to go, what is the highlight of this film? I don't have one. There's not a moment in this film that's so memorable that you're going to sit there and it just leaps out jumps at you. Sure, there's Nick Fury getting his eye cut out by the cat, and in any of the scenes with Nick Fury and the cat. Okay, those are phenomenal. A lot of the scenes with Brie Larson acting with Samuel L. Jackson were really, really good. When you had those two opposite of each other,
chemistry.
That's probably where the movie was at its best points.
They also, it was neat too, the way they portrayed the fact that, what's his name, the guy who plays Phil Coulson, the way they made him look like he was in his 20s or early 30s, the way they used the CGI to de-age these people, it looked really good. It's chilling a little bit, but it looked really good.
Kind of like what they did, they did Kurt Russell with standard effects.
But they used CGI, right. And it's chilling, but...
But I guess where I'm going with it is, nothing has to stand out in this movie. Remember what this movie was a get you to Endgame movie and introduce a character who's going to play a role in Endgame.
Yeah, that's a
and
point.
They came back, and this is essentially a prequel. They jumped you way back in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You could have told this story at any point you wanted to, and then kept Carol Danvers on ice until she shows up in Endgame, because it didn't matter. This is a movie you can watch. If you're watching the Cinematic Universe for the first time, you can watch this movie at any point that you want to, and it doesn't change anything as long as you watch it. Even if you watch it after Endgame, it won't matter, I don't think. But for what this movie is, there doesn't have to be a standout point, because to me, the movie is so well balanced that there's not a moment where I was going, is this thing over yet? And it just worked well. So that's a cheap way of saying there isn't something that's a highlight of the movie, but on balance, the entire movie works and is enjoyable to watch.
Okay, that's fair enough. And I definitely see your point, and that makes sense. And I will, in some ways, modify my opinion, being what you just said. It makes sense. I will continue, in my opinion, to say it was, as I texted you guys earlier, Captain Mioka. But it doesn't need to be amazing, as you said. It just kind of gets you to where you need to be for Endgame.
It has to do its job.
Yeah. So it does.
You got to be real careful when you're telling a prequel, a movie that predates everything that came before the 367 Marvel Cinematic Universe movies that are out there at this point.
368 at this point.
You got to tell a story that is 40 years in the past, 30 years in the past.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You ballparked it, and that's scary now that I think about it.
In a timeline, it's 25 to 30 years in the past from where we are today in this movie. in this timeline, and you got to be very, very careful that you don't step on anything else that you've established.
Right.
And they did a decent job of doing that.
Right. Oh, they did a decent job. Yeah. And they also did.
It limits what she can do. She really, it'd be dangerous to have her run into Thanos. It'd be dangerous to have her, you know.
Right. She has to be very limited in what she does and what they do. And it does some interesting things with setting up, you know, what S.H.I.E.L.D. is in the future and, you know, the Avengers program and things like that. I mean, I rolled my eyes admittedly when I went, oh, the Avengers program is from her. That's call true. Sign.
I did find that stupid too, actually. It's like, really?
But I will
see. That's one of those, hey, let's hyper explain something. You don't need to hyper. Just, he wanted to call it Avengers. Good enough.
But I think Marvel has shown you, especially in the recent movies that they've done, what they think their formula for success in the future is going to be. It's keep it quick, keep it fast paced, keep it fun, keep it lighthearted. Yeah. And I think you're going to see more movies in the vein of Captain Marvel, Thor Ragnarok, and the Guardians, because I think those have been the Infinity Wars. You keep it lighthearted, you keep it quippy, and it works pretty well. And then you ramp the action up to over the top levels, and you downplay the political and social message, and people get happy.
Okay,
I enjoy your films.
I'm just going to say, I don't know, and you can totally disagree with me here. I don't know if after Endgame, the MCU will continue as it has. There is going to be I think, viewer fatigue, okay? There is going to be a lot of people who have just said, I made it to Endgame, I'm done. You know, I'm going to either step back, I'm not watching everything, or I'm just going to completely, I'm done 100%.
I've said this before.
There's going to be some.
I am watching Endgame tomorrow, and then it will be a year probably before I watch a Marvel Cinematic Universe film or a comic book film of any type, because I can't be bothered to care anymore
right
at this point. I'll watch something else.
I think there's also going to be a few other people. And again, I think that's one aspect of it. And I think the other aspect being, after Endgame, I don't know how many of the characters, again, we haven't seen it yet, so I don't know, how many of the characters we care about are going to still be around. I mean, I mean, we talked about Star Wars, that, you know, teaser or whatever, same type of deal, where you saw it and you went, who's left? This might be the same aspect of it, where you go, hey, guys, is Captain America, Iron Man, anyone I care about? No, I'm good.
I think that's why
we can't say exactly.
And that's what I'm saying. We haven't seen it yet, so I don't know.
Civil War, and people think I'm crazy for this, but Civil War was the point where I took a break from the MCU for a while, and I think what I felt like was going on in Civil War was that we were pushing the first line characters out to try to introduce this next wave of characters, and I didn't care for it. And I just sat there and I'm like, oh, you want me to care about these guys now? A Falcon is great, but I don't care.
Right.
Give me more of the characters I've been watching for 9 movies.
And that's my only point, that I don't.
That's fair.
I don't know if after Endgame, the MCU will be as strong as it is now. I could be totally wrong. I could. And after watching Endgame, I might be like, dude, I love this. The new characters are great. They're going to be great moving forwards. Or I might be proven right, and we'll see.
That's an interesting point, that I think I'm of the same mind, that we'll wait and see, but it may really start petering off, even if it doesn't right away, because there's still another Spider-Man movie coming out, so that might do pretty well. And after that, it's anyone's guess, because, I mean, how much more of these can you do until people just finally say, what else you got?
I'll say it like this. Aside from Ant-Man and the Wasp, I haven't seen any deterioration in quality, and I'm on an island on that one, but I think that the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they're making better movies now than they were at the start, and I think they just keep making better movies.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
But I think at some point, though, it becomes like Game of Thrones. I love Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones has not made a bad series of television yet. I have watched 15 minutes of the new season of Game of Thrones, And when I sit down to try to watch it, it's not that they're bad. And I know these episodes are going to be amazing in this final season, but I don't care anymore. I've watched so much Game of Thrones, read so much Game of Thrones, that I don't care about Game of Thrones at the moment.
Right.
And there's no deterioration in quality. I've just had too much of it.
I think that's my point.
That's a point.
And that I think we will see. And again, we will have to wait and see what happens.
So let's talk about, before we wrap up reviewing the movie and move into the controversy, and then we'll come back at the end and rate the film. But I think we know we're at this point close to where each of us is going with that final rating. There are two messages in this film. And in this, and you usually don't have as clear cut a social and political message in a Marvel Cinematic Universe as you do in this one. You did in a couple of the movies, but there's two. On one side, it is definitely a commentary on refugee status.
Yes.
I'm glad you brought that up. May I?
Go ahead.
Because I hate the society we live in sometimes where I have to preface this. I am an ESL teacher. I teach the refugee population. I'm married to a foreigner. I find half the time that the company of internationals is far more preferable to my own countrymen at times. So when I say this, bear that in mind. As sympathetic as I am to the refugee crisis of anybody who's suffering from having to be a refugee, because at the end of the day, the difference between a refugee and any other kind of immigrant is that the refugee never wanted to leave. And given the opportunity to go back in their country and live in peace, they would. So bear that in mind. So, this argument I have is purely on a comic book fan level. And that being, in the comics, the Kree-Skrull War is not what they make it in the movie. And everything I just said about Kevin Feige getting it right, well, this is where I have to scale it back. This is where he didn't. And I can put this at Kevin Feige's feet because they have those lookbooks and he's intensely involved in this. The problem is that in the comics, the Kree-Skrull War is really just a cold war. Two of the biggest kids in the galactic block having a fight. And Earth is caught in the middle. And the Avengers have to get involved to basically let both sides know you can go duke it out there, but Earth is off limits. And to do so, part of what happens is something called a Nega bomb blows up. Nega, N-E-G-A. And it blows up the Kree homeworld. And that's one of the things that ends the war and makes everyone realize in the galactic community, we shouldn't just mess with Earth. They just don't roll over. They fight back. And that was not how this was portrayed here. And here, the Skrulls were these sad refugee victims. And as much as I am pro-refugee, I just personally, knowing the comic stories, would have preferred they'd stuck to that. That's a very personal, I recognize that that's a very personal beef and that no one else or very few people will have it. And it's not because I think they were being some kind of bleeding heart, annoying this or that. I just would have preferred they stuck closer to the comic.
I actually think this one was very well done. The message was, they didn't take a sledgehammer with it. And they didn't go out of their way to say this is the crisis going on our border right now. The reason that there are caravans coming up to the United States-Mexican border from Central America is that if you're a mother of three kids and they're 3 and 5 years old, people say, well, come into the country legally. By the time you go through the 3 to 5 year process to get into the country legally, the drug cartel has earmarked your son at 10 and you know that he's either going to be dead for not joining the cartel or part of the drug cartel.
Well,
and so as a mother, what are you going to do? Wait the 5 years to get in legally and know that your son's not going to live those 5 years or maybe die of starvation in the meantime or stray bullets? Or are you going to try today to do any risk possible? So, and this is where this movie is showing you this refugee crisis isn't as clear cut as you think it is. And in this case, it went a little over the top to say that all of the Skrull refugees are simply looking for a safe place to live. But you sometimes use hyperbole to make a point. And what you're trying to get across here is that we have this rhetoric in America that every single refugee coming across the border is really, you know, we've got a president who's out there saying they're bringing crime and drugs and disease over the border every single day. And I think this movie's trying to tell you to take another look at it and say it might not be what the propaganda tells you it is.
Scott, I'm not trying to say that that the way they did it was bad. I'm just saying, gee, that's really good. I kind of like the comic Kree-Skrull War better. Okay. It was just a
personal preference. But then you lose this ability to make this message.
I know that, but I'm just saying I would have preferred that message a little bit better. Just because I like that story and I would have liked to have seen it. That's the only thing. It's a personal story preference.
I think I know where you're going. So let me just say this before I turn you loose here. I understand that the movie took liberties with controls to say that every single Skrull refugee is a good person. And that in the real world in America, there are some bad people mixed in those caravans as on purpose to try to get them across the border. I get that. The reality of it.
Well, yes, you're right. But I wasn't quite even going there. I mean, you are right in what you said, but my comment wasn't going there as much. I mean, in the movie, they are true refugees and they are fighting a guerrilla war using terrorism in some ways to do what they have to. In the movie, I'm 100% on their side. They're true refugees. My issue was more with your comments with the refugees and your use of the word refugees for the people coming across the border. Those are immigrants.
Technically, if they're trying to find an agent and seek asylum, they're asylum seekers. So
right.
Most of what's in those caravans coming up from Central America are people fleeing either a country that isn't functioning or a country that's been in some cases overrun by the drug cartels. There's not enough food. I mean,
right. And I'm not saying they don't have good reason for leaving.
Most of that is a refugee caravan that's on its way. The people on that train are effectively they're asylum seekers, if you want to use that term. But I mean, I think they're leaving because the choice is stay there and die or hopefully find a way across the border.
And yes. And my only issue is, there is the usage of that word can be, I hate using this word, problematic. I hate that word, but the usage of that word has a problem, being that, yes, there are bad actors and things like that. But there is a very clearly defined legal term for refugee. And I hate our modern world sometimes when this stuff comes up and we have to have this discussion. But refugee is a very exact legal term.
And you're probably right. In the legalese of it, it may not qualify, but I think in the spirit of the term, it probably qualifies.
I think it actually does qualify because they're fleeing for their life. And if they had had the choice to not flee, they would have. It's the same thing with the Syrians. If they had had the choice, they would have stayed home. But when Bashir is bulldozing your house and looking for your family,
Before we split hairs, because we're really splitting hairs over a term, Thomas, I get your point.
Well, I'm sorry. My only point was, if they're refugees, then legally they have to stop at the nearest safe country and not make it all the way to the American border.
My only point, sorry. Okay. I understand what you're saying there. The movie at least makes you think about an issue going on. It picked a hot topic, social, humanitarian issue going on in our country and made a commentary about it. Whether you agree with that commentary or not, the movie made it. It makes you think about it and maybe reevaluate and say, is the official stories we're being told about what's going on our border correct? Or maybe it's not. And whether it is or isn't, whether the movie's right or wrong, That's for you to make a judgment. The movie gets to play in a controlled universe where they're right because they control everything. But at least I applaud Marvel for having the guts to go in and really hit on a current social issue, and everyone knows what that social issue is, and discuss it in this case.
Ah, but that wasn't the hot button one, was it?
Wasn't.
No, because that was the secondary one.
The second thing you have in here is that this is very, very clearly a female empowerment story. Nick Fury is in there as a supporting actor. This story is about Carol Danvers. This story is about Mar-Vell. This story is about, and I'm bad right now because I can't remember Carol Danvers' friend who's going to be the pilot at the end.
You know, I don't remember either.
Is
that because at the end of the day, you're not as invested in her? You're more invested in her daughter.
Maria.
Okay.
Rambo.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well,
so, but
you're all right. Yeah.
It is about her daughter. It is about the bond between those women. It shows you the struggle that Carol Danvers is going through to get into the Air Force. The fact that they wouldn't let them fly actual combat missions. They had to go get time, you know, on reserve.
Which happened.
The male recruits laughing at her, saying she's going to fall. She's not going to make it through basic training. You know, and that probably was close to realistic in the 1990s, somewhat still in the 1980s, 1990s. It shows you this. It shows you, you know, you get that thing at the end where she's knocked down against synthetic intelligence, and it shows that's a brilliant. I mean, you got to love that montage of her getting knocked down throughout her life over and over again and saying, I will not stay down. I will get up. Whatever you hit me with, I'm going to keep coming. And in some ways, there's a bigger commentary there about the feminist movement, that no matter how hard you hit us, we're going to get up and keep moving. And this movement isn't going to stay down because you hit us with a shot.
You could, to some degree, debate that that is still going on somewhat in the Air Force. They don't have too many female pilots flying combat missions or in combat zones too often.
They were trying to do it. They are doing advertisements to try to change that, apparently.
Yes.
You saw it at the beginning of the movie, too.
I did see that, and because of that, I did look something up, which you guys might hate me for this, but they showed the F-22 Raptor and the F-35s being flown by women. Oh, they implied it.
Why would I hate you for that?
Well, because I looked it up and actually did my research in this. And
why would I hate you for that? I looked up and found out women are flying an F-22.
Okay. Well, they kind of are, but not. There is only, I believe, only one reserve group of women flying one of those two aircraft. Most of those are being flown by men. And that's why you might hate me for it, because I actually look it up.
How can I get upset with you with the fact that's what it is? If that's what it is, then that's what it is. That's why I guess the Air Force is trying to reverse that trend.
They aren't really. Okay, that's my discussion of it.
I see.
You could debate that it's still going on, being that they still have not done equal. I mean, honestly, that's some debate over the armed forces to this day, is women aren't, you know, equal in that. I mean,
okay,
you do have the aspect of it being that right now we're three of us in this room are men, and all three of us have, when we turned 18, had to do the nice selective service.
Oh yeah, they don't do selective service.
No, women are not.
That's true.
Women do not apply for the draft.
I believe that was part of the Equal Rights Amendment, but that got shot down. So.
Yes, women, if we go to World War III, and I hope that never happens, but if it does, more than likely, every single male in this country will start getting drafted.
Well, I'm sure this day and age would be a pretty easy thing to make add women to the draft. If it were that bad, it would be no difficult task to make that happen.
So, yeah, the second message in this movie is obvious, and I will say I applaud Marvel for doing it. It's about time. Almost every one of the lead superheroes, every one of the title characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been a man. It was about time in this day and age to go out there and have a lead character in a movie based around a female superhero and not a second-tier female superhero. Someone said, why not do a Black Widow movie? Well, Black Widow is, no one's going to mistake Black Widow as a first tier.
They are making a movie of her.
Okay.
Yes.
But that wouldn't have done the same thing. That wouldn't have been the same as this. This movie shows you a female superhero who is every bit as powerful as any other superhero out there. And I, you know, and if you want to really, it wouldn't be that hard to change the story of Captain Marvel to a Thor movie.
Probably have
everything
not.
She does be done by Thor. It wouldn't take that much changing. It's not that hard to do.
Well, you'd have to change.
There's
that.
Some things, but you're right. There's change definitely the, some. You're right.
It fits change the within Kree the general.
To, yeah. Change the Kree to the Asgardians and the refugees, the Frost. Oh my gosh, it's Thor. You basically just described the movie Thor.
And so what you did here is you don't have a sidekick. It's not like Gamora being an also-ran with Star-Lord. It's not a sidekick character. It's not a second-tier superhero character. It is someone who the story is about and someone who can be the face of the MCU. And then we're hearing that's what it's going to be in the next phase. I applaud Marvel for doing this. It is time to do this. It doesn't have to be a publicity stunt. It doesn't have to be a reason. It doesn't have to be story-driven. In this day and age, you should be able to have a female lead or two who are just as powerful as the men. And maybe when you have 367 movies, all 367 of them shouldn't have male superheroes at the lead of it.
And I agree with you 100% there. My only issue is I don't know if they chose the best one to play Captain Marvel.
And now we're into the controversy, because the controversy in this film is Brie Larson. Not Captain Marvel.
No, because
not the fact that it's a female lead. The controversy is Brie Larson. And we're going to ask two questions. I'm going to ask two questions. But first, let's get into the controversy. The marketing for this film was marketed as a female empowerment film.
Oh, boy. Was
I
it
don't
ever.
Think it was over the top like, say, the Ghostbusters remake was.
No.
But
not that
you
bad.
Did get the bigger, faster, stronger her. You know, where they you knew coming into this that this was going to be a Marvel story, that one of its central themes was going to be about female empowerment and feminism.
And it ran throughout the whole film, right, for sure.
Which is a difference from something like Alita Battle Angel that we reviewed last week, where, you know, by its very nature, it was going to be a film about female empowerment because it was about a female hero who's going to save the world and is, you know, the champion of the downtrodden. And the strongest character in the film. But it wasn't marketed that way. It was just marketed as an anime film adaptation. But this movie kind of had a middle ground between Alita and Ghostbusters, where you knew what you were getting. You knew that there was a message to send. And then you picked Brie Larson to be that actress. And it didn't take long. And I do believe that it was a segment of the toxic fan base that went looking for the comments that Miss Larson left out there. And they dug up the comments that she made talking about A Wrinkle in Time, where she said, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't need a 40-year-old white dude to tell me what did and didn't work for him in A Wrinkle in Time because it wasn't a movie made for him. At some point, those comments in some articles were twisted as if she said that about Captain Marvel.
Right.
That she doesn't need a 40-year-old white dude telling her what's going to work for him in Captain Marvel and what didn't because the movie wasn't made for him.
No, I'm just, you stepped into a gray area there, and sorry for me interrupting. She did not, I agree with you, she didn't say that about Captain Marvel at all. The issue then comes up during the Captain Marvel press tour. She did do a lot of work to, I don't want to exclude white males, but there was evidence of, while she was out there, she placing out, I'm going to do this interview. If you have anyone other than a white male, send them to interview me.
What she said was that she wants a more diverse press room.
Right.
She didn't say you had to take a chair away from white men, but what she said was, can you put more chairs in the room so that we can get the opinion on this movie? Because, okay,
and my point
I kind
is,
of understand what she's saying here.
And I'm not disagreeing with what the idea behind it. I think the execution behind it might have been a little flawed.
Yeah, I think Brie Larson doesn't care.
That's a good way of putting it.
She is unapologetically a feminist. And she just doesn't care if she probably feels. And in the end, she's probably right. If you're an activist, what did Frederick Douglass say? At the end of his life, someone asked Frederick Douglass for advice. And he said, agitate, young man, agitate. Because if you're not agitating, you're not stirring change. So if you're really going for a cause, and you're Brie Larson, and you don't think that there is equality among the genders, and you think that it's much farther off than people want to say it is, and that there's a lot of work to do, then you should be happy when men are getting upset about some of the things you're saying and the points that you're making, because you're actually at that point making change and people are getting mad about that change. People are getting mad. It's you're changing things or you're threatening the status quo that you're trying to change. And you know, I said, Mark, you said it. What's better, a lever or a sledgehammer? Sometimes the lever.
You said that.
And there are a lot of times the lever. Sometimes you just need the sledgehammer.
Okay. This is going to be really tough to phrase.
We're into the dangerous part of the show now.
Hence why I'm trying to step very cautiously here. There could be a debate, and I definitely think you're right, that she believes that in her feminism quite heavily. And she believes that there's a long ways to go. There is a debate on where that is, if we are closer to it or not. I mean, there is a debate going on right now out there.
We have to be closer than we were 40 years ago. The question is, are we closer enough to where we should be, hypothetically?
Right. And there is a debate to be had about that. I'm not going to place my foot down on one side or the other right now in this discussion. There is a debate going on. So it's not like you can clearly state one way or the other in this way. There is also the issue with being that there is a debate going on here. The sledgehammer might not be the best approach. I'm just going to say this for the simple fact that can really harden people who are sitting on the fence. It can. If someone's sitting there going, I'm not 100% sure, it might be that women need more representation. And then someone comes walking in and just whams you in the face going, I'm powerful, I'm strong, I'm women in power. That can turn people off. It can.
It can. And I generally, the force of the status quo feels that way. But the status quo was very powerful. And on certain ingrained things, you need a sledgehammer.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I'm only stating.
You go back and you look at the civil rights movement of the 1960s. And you'd tried to use levers. And you had tried to not really use a sledgehammer method for 100 years. And it didn't work. You used the sledgehammer in the 60s. In a decade, more change happened than happened in 100 years. And even Martin Luther King, who advocated nonviolence, he set out to go to places where he knew he'd be arrested.
Yes.
Okay. So, well, that's still a sledgehammer. It's a different type of sledgehammer.
Yes.
But he set out to make the biggest splash he could. Well, and if he was upsetting people, maybe he knew he was doing what he was supposed to be doing.
Well, there's a difference between, I think, aggravating and that type of sledgehammer and just hitting people in the face to hit people in the face. I mean, you can go and protest something that you think is wrong. And you have a right to do that. But you don't have the right to then go up and hit someone if you don't agree with them.
True.
I think there's a difference between saying something and protesting and following through in that way. And then there's a different type of approach. I mean, we kind of agree here that I can go up. Let's just go into it. Alt-right neo-Nazi. I don't agree with them. I don't think anyone in this room. Well, I know everyone in this room don't agree with them. And we would all disagree with them and argue against them. But none of us would go hit one. that's actually action and violence.
I'm also not going to feel bad when they get hit in the face, though.
Yeah, when in the 80s, when a bunch of skinheads went to State Road Park and the local Ukrainian community came out to kill them, I don't think a lot of people, and some of them were survivors of World War II, I don't think anybody was really saying, I mean, the police had to come out and protect them as a matter of law, but I don't think anybody was actually crying on behalf of the skinheads and saying, there's two sides to this discussion.
I'm not saying that. Whoa. Be careful, please.
Mighty fine people.
Yeah.
Nobody was saying that back then.
And I'm not saying that now. My only point on that conversation was there was both of those are sledgehammer. One of those would be the proper response. One is not.
All right. I guess this is another question I want to ask here, though. See, I think a lot of the controversy around Brie Larson has been blown out of proportion and the flames were fanned.
I would agree with you.
There's three statements that have really been piled together to be the Brie Larson is so horrible and heinous and you know, she hates white men. And those three statements combined are the Wrinkle in Time statement. That you don't need a 40-year-old white dude telling her what did and didn't work for him in A Wrinkle in Time because the movie wasn't made for him. Take that one in isolation. I have no problem with that statement.
Yeah,
I really don't. It would be like I use the Dr. Pepper 10, it's not for women campaign. There are TV shows that we know are not made and marketed for women. And if you went to the person who made that TV show, As a 35-year-old mother of two who's working 35-year-old single mom of two, and you went to them and you said, hey, I'm not even going to say a show offhand, but this show that doesn't work for me. And they'd look at you and say, I understand, because our targeted demographic is 18 to 35-year-old men.
Right. And I agree with you. I think it could have been said more tactfully, but I don't disagree with her point.
Yeah. At the same time, I don't have a problem with the way she said it. I really don't.
I'm not saying it was a bad way. I'm saying it could have been said more tactfully. Was it the worst way of saying it? No.
Does it have to?
No.
Did she really come out there and say, I hate white men?
No.
She just said this movie wasn't made for you. So if it didn't work for you, that's okay, because it was working for the people it was supposed to work for.
Right. Now let's move on to the second one, which you... have.
The second one is in general where she wanted more diverse. She basically came out and said, I'm not going to do press conferences if I walk out in that room and it's just white men. I want to see a diverse press room. That's a laudable statement.
Yeah, I can't get too mad about that one, because even like I forgot his name. The performer, Ray.
You're not giving us enough to work with there, buddy.
He did this. Ray, he was a famous blues and singer, blind guy.
Ray Charles.
I can't believe I forgot that. Ray Charles refused to play Jim Crow. So yeah, that was an act of protest.
It comes down to.
It's a similar vein, actually.
We probably should be at a point where a press room shouldn't. You shouldn't walk into a press room and see just a bunch of white dudes there. You probably shouldn't, because then whose perspective then are you getting? When you're the movie going public, if every single reviewer looks like the three people in this room.
Right. And I'm not.
You're not. Maybe there should be some people in there to bring you other perspectives and ask questions from another perspective.
And I would agree with you again, Scott. But I would state again, I think it could have been done more tactfully. Some of what she said. Again, I'm not disagreeing with your point. Oh, anything you said.
She came back and said, I'm not asking for any of them to have their press passes taken away. I'm asking you to add a couple seats and find someone who doesn't look like Scott, Thomas, and Mark to sit in my press.
And my point is, she had to revise it and come out and specify.
But did she revise it because the initial request of saying, I don't want to come out in that room and see a whole bunch, only white dudes in there, is that a bad thing? I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't really necessarily think it should have had to have been revised.
No, and I'm just stating.
That's what I said. I feel like it was blown out of proportion.
And I'm agreeing
with
you.
By the media.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying.
Could she have stated it more tactfully? Maybe. Should she have had to? I don't think so.
Right. But this is, unfortunately, the world we live in, that anything you say can be taken way out of proportion. So I think some ways tactfulness is almost required sometimes.
And then you get to the final one where she's doing an interview with Chris Hemsworth and they're talking about the movie and he's tongue in cheek praising her about doing her own stunts and saying, you're going to be the next Tom Cruise. And she comes back and says, no, Chris, I'm going to be the first me. And then he says something and she goes, I'm stronger than you, Chris. And she goes, and he goes, but no, you're not. In a transcript.
I didn't see that.
In a transcript.
This is not Captain Marvel.
Very, very badly.
Well, this A is not Captain Marvel. This is Endgame, but yes.
I'm sorry. Yes, it was an interview for Endgame. But in a transcript, the tone of that could come across bad. I watched it live. Chris Hemsworth never acts like he's offended. And I feel that it's really just a woman who lacks personality and warmth.
Yes.
Coming across sounding cold. I think she's trying to be funny.
I think she
does. And I think it's applaudable and a great message for young women to sit there and say, no, you don't have to be the next man. Be the first woman to do what you're going to do.
Scott, thank you.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Scott, thank you for bringing up the point I wanted to bring up.
That's the real problem with Brie Larson.
She has no personality.
She has the personality
of a wall.
That plastic Yoda right there.
She has no... And thank you for bringing this up because I felt like I was going to dig myself in the hole for this.
She lacks warmth.
Yes, she lacks warmth.
She lacks an inherent instant likability. She's cold.
Cold? She doesn't have that warmth. There seems to be some empathy issues, maybe?
Once you get to know her, she may be a wonderful woman. But there is a clipped coolness and aloofness that comes off to her that kind of can, on a first hear of the tone of what she says, it can come across like she's taking a different position.
Yeah, well,
but I think if you step back, she hasn't done anything wrong.
Well, yeah, and you're absolutely right for the simple fact that if you're watching that interview that you brought up, though, you have, man, what's his name? War Machine.
James Rhodes or the actor?
Yeah.
The actor.
The actor.
I don't know the actor.
He's on one side of
Don Cheadle.
Thank you. Don Cheadle on one side. And then you have her in the middle, which isn't the best position to be in any interviews or anything. But both of them are sit back, they're relaxing, they're kind of joking around here. You have Brie Larson in that interview, stiff as a board, straight up, like, not relaxed. It's off-putting. I'm just going to say that. If I'm looking at, you know, those three, I got two people where I'm like, oh, they're just having fun, they're relaxed. And then you have her sitting there like a stiff board. I'm not... What she said? Not so bad.
I think it's just
how it just came. How she
even that smile looks. Like.
I think a lot of this. I think a lot of what's boomeranging on Brie Larson is this is a person trying to be ironic, trying to be funny. In all of these statements, I think she tried to play witty,
right,
and funny and sarcastic, and it backfired because she's not good at it.
No, she. I don't. Yeah, to some extent. Again,
she's trying to force a personality that isn't natural to her, I think, in a lot of ways.
And I mean, actors and actresses can play roles quite often and do things like that, but I don't think she's able to pull that off.
Male actors have screwed up too royally. Yes. Let's not forget about William Shatner going on Saturday Night Live telling the fans to get a life.
Oh, I know. Absolutely.
William Shatner, go. You want to see something? Go on Twitter and watch William Shatner annoy Star Trek fans every day. He don't care no more.
I know.
He's 82 years old.
I'm not saying that it's exclusively to her. Absolutely not. I just feel...
I think a lot's boomeranged on her because I just don't think that... She has an aloof personality. And I think she's trying to... I think in time, as she'll find her personality and what needs to be her public persona. I don't think anything she said is wrong. I don't think there's anything... Yeah. So vile and evil and man-hating in her.
No,
she's definitely a feminist. And I guess...
I'm just going to say, I feel that Marvel could have chosen a better actress to play this role.
Yeah, I'm not... I mean, I'm going to agree with you on that. I'm not wowed on her acting ability. I'm not wowed on her acting range. But in the end, this is who they chose.
Yeah.
And I think she's trying to get better with her interactions with the public. But I'm going to ask, this is the last question I really want to ask about this before we get into rating it, I think. There was a lot of controversy about Marvel marketing this as a female empowerment film. And why couldn't you just tell the story you're going to tell in Captain Marvel without telling everyone ahead of time, look at what we're going to do. We're going to do a female empowerment film. And there was a lot of stuff about Brie Larson. Why do you have to come out and tell us that you're a feminist? Why do you have to come out with this agenda? Why do you have to let us know you've got this axe to grind? And I think the question I have to ask is, why does it bother us? Why are we so upset that Marvel made an unabashed, announced, marketed female empowerment film? Are we so threatened by this film, by this one female empowerment film to go with the other 367 male empowerment films, that we have to sit there and be offended? Are we threatened by it? I don't understand. Why does it? There are other actors who can have a cause and we're okay with them having a cause. Why do we sit there and feel like, hey, Brie Larson, your cause is feminism, but can you not be so public about it? Can you do it a little more subtly? Why? Why does she have to? Is there anything wrong with her cause? Is there anything wrong with Marvel doing an occasional feminist empowerment or female empowerment film? And I guess I don't understand. And I have to watch my own reactions about it. We have this gut-wrench reaction to it of saying, why does it have to be that way? It doesn't need to be that way.
Scott, you answered your own question with your toxic fandom supplemental, which basically said, I want to veg out on a fun superhero movie.
But and why can't... why?
I'm just saying, you answered your own question. So if you're backing around and rethinking your own point, fine.
I get it. But they don't want to see that. They don't want to see... I get it. I said that in the supplemental. It's a comic book fan. They just want to go shut their brain off.
Well, not but just a comic book fan, but...
I'm digging deeper into that in this question of saying, why can't we go watch Captain Marvel for 2 hours and shut our brain off with a knowing that it's got a, hey, women can do things message to it, to quote Anchorman, and that it's got a slight commentary about the refugees in there. It was still a fun 2-hour romp. Why are we threatened by that?
I think that would be more directed towards me in this point, because I think in this room, I am probably the furthest right leaning in this room.
For sure.
Thank you. I think.
No, it's just the reality. Yes,
I know. But my point is,
we're aligned politically. Yes. Where are we aligned in the room right now? Yes. At the table.
It's right mid. I suppose. Left.
I am left of Thomas. You are left of me.
Yes. Mm. And we're lined up that way on the table. But yes, I think that would be more directed towards me. And I will say I was not at all minding it. Some of it comes down to, for me, Hollywood doesn't really make movies, in my opinion, directed towards the right so much. A lot of it has lefter messages.
Traditionally.
Especially in the last 5 to 8 years.
Right.
Oh, if you even go back to the golden age of Hollywood in the 20s, they had their gems. Go back and watch the Hunchback of Notre Dame, not the Lon Chaney Jr. The Lon Chaney Sr. one, but the one scene where, and this was directed by a refugee from Nazi Germany, and there's a scene where gypsies are trying to enter Paris, and the guards are saying, nope, won't let no gypsies, you're foreigners, and the gypsy responded with, foreigner, what's the difference? You come yesterday, I come today. And that was a very political statement. Yeah. So that the left is leaning. That's nothing new in Hollywood at all.
And that's my point being, I expect that. I expect left messages in my media. So when this came out, I didn't care. I knew I expected my media all the time left messages. So I went and watched it. And I turned off my brain. I watched the movie. I came out and went, meh, it was okay.
As far as a female empowerment film goes, and I've used that term that you're drinking game. it really wasn't that much of a female empowerment film.
At points, almost you could debate the opposite.
It was very muted. You had the montage at the end of her getting back up. You had the relationship between her and Rambo. You had the women doing the big damn hero things throughout the whole movie. So on that point, yes, but there's nothing in this film when you watch it that should have generated the controversy that was generated leading up to this film and has continued after this film.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. And being that I'm the rightest of this, I, you know, according to this, you know, media and everything, I should have hated this. I didn't. I just said okay and moved on.
Yeah, but you're the farthest right person in this room, and I would say on your most right day, you're moderate Republican. You're moderate right. You're never going to be the guy in the extreme wings of the Republican Party. You're not that guy.
No, and I'm not saying
I listen to Alex Jones occasionally. Hey. And we try not to hold that against you.
Yeah, just like you do, just to laugh at the guy when he goes, turning the frogs gay. Yeah.
Supernovas or trace amounts of blueberries.
We all listen and watch him for the hilarity of it. I mean, come on.
It's a left-wing globalist agenda.
Am I the only one who...
Psionic vampires are coming for your children, Nation.
Dude, I'm sorry, but I watched him when he was on Joe Rogan for the simple fact I couldn't stop laughing my ass off.
It's a false flag operation. False flag. Thanos is a false flag operation.
But yeah. So, yeah. I'm definitely not super right at all. So maybe I'm...
Next up, people, selling our Mighty Mix oatmeal. You eat this stuff three times a day, you'll be strong like me. Or you'll go to the hospital for eating sawdust in a packet.
These are not FDA approved.
The FDA won't approve us. It's good stuff. The FDA is just against us because it's part of a left-wing globalist agenda.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Keep going, Jones. Keep going. But, yes.
I think it's time to rate this movie. Before I fall into my Alex Jones impression randomly for no reason.
I think that Brie Larson clearly has an axe to grind. And when you introduce bitter root into anything, whether you should or shouldn't, it causes people to have a revulsion reflex. Again, whether you should or shouldn't is not the discussion, the point I'm making. I'm just saying she has an axe to grind. She dropped bitter roots into the mixture and people had a revulsion. And Marvel should be very lucky, should feel very lucky that did not damage the movie. And going forward, they should make sure that axe to grind doesn't come out, that bitterness doesn't take over the role. Because it could have an adverse effect on future movies if they decide to let her indulge in it. Again, I'm not making a value statement on whether she should or shouldn't or what she should or shouldn't do. But what I'm just saying is, in general, when you add bitterness, you receive bitterness in kind.
I think that's well said.
And again...
Can't find any fault with that statement.
Maybe she's right to do it. Maybe she's got a good reason for doing it. But that means you have to accept the consequence of the blowback. And sometimes that's justified. Sometimes you have to take the blowback because the greater cause is worth it. Sometimes it is not.
The hardest thing to do.
And what the Marvel movies have to decide right now is, are they willing to let her platform potentially risk their fiduciary gains?
I think and in the their answer mind, to that right now is
their
yes.
Their mind is, are they willing to let her position potentially risk the financial success of a future movie?
I think Kevin Feige and Marvel believe that they are bulletproof. And the fact of the already roaring success of Endgame has reinforced it in their mind that not even Brie Larson can sink the Titanic
I'm not going to say that about Kevin Feige because I don't know the guy. And since he is someone that tends to.
Well, he's already come out and said she's the face of the next phase of the MCU, hasn't he?
Yes.
that doesn't mean he's going to let her have free rein, because remember, Kevin Feige has tight controls on that.
Sure. But so in the most recent interview she did, she was still out there doing Brie Larson things. Yeah. So,
Then I guess you're right.
I mean, I'm just saying, I think you're right. They could try to rein her in as time goes on, but at the moment they don't appear to have any desire to rein her in.
Right. And I think we both agree with what you said. You phrased it very well. And that's a good point you brought up. And I think you said it in an excellent way.
So let's get to the last agenda point on my hastily written agenda. Get the bleep out before it goes sideways. Let's rate this film.
Too late.
Nah, we didn't go sideways. I think we stayed pretty much on track. And
I think we walked through the minefield without detonating anything.
We stayed in that moderate zone where everyone calls us wimps. Without
and
a spine.
Spineless, yeah. Who shall go first, and how are we going to rate it?
I'll rate it. I'll kick it off. How do you rate this one?
1 out of 10.
How many flurkins?
Please, no.
I'm going to give it 7.5 flurkins. It's a fun film. It's a good film. I will say that it's not Thor Ragnarok. It's not Infinity War. It's not Civil War, but it's right up there with some of the other good second tier films. I put it right up there with the Doctor Strange film. I put it right up. It's not Guardians 1 or 2, but it's among the top of the second tier really good Marvel Cinematic Universe films in my mind. It's fun. It's enjoyable. And it did well in the constraints that it had, and that it had to be an origin story that had to be very, very, very careful to not step on the miles and miles and miles of existing canon. It did that well. There was never a point in the movie where I wasn't entertained and I didn't walk out of the movie theater going, well, thank God I got that, off the completion checklist. And there have been other Marvel movies, Iron Man 3, where I'm going, thank God I got that off the completion checklist. To be honest, none of the Iron Man movies that are actually named Iron Man were very good, but the first two Avengers films, which were really just Iron Man movies, were amazing.
I thought you liked Iron Man 1.
Iron Man 1 was good, but compared to the stuff that came after it, I'd watch a ton of the stuff that came after Iron Man 1. Iron Man 1 is fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but I don't think any of the Iron Man films were great. I think any of them get above a 7.5, and Iron Man 3 was, I don't know what you were doing there.
But, I don't think anyone knows what they were doing there.
I gave it 7.5. Nothing wrong with the movie, but there's also nothing great. If I'm picking an MCU movie or two to watch on a desert island, it's not this one. But it's also not Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That's your opinion. I guess I'm going to have to give it 5. It wasn't terrible. I didn't walk out of the theater going, if I got that off of my checklist, I didn't do that and wasn't sitting there going, why did I waste my time? But I walked out with nothing going that most movies, and I will even say the last Star Wars, hated it. Absolutely. But I walked out of the theater going, that scene in the throne room was awesome. And then I thought about it and no.
No.
I walked out of this movie with meh. And my opinion has not changed. There was nothing in it that to me stood out enough that I was going, that was an amazing scene. That was the best scene ever. It was more of a, okay, that was a movie. I'm ready for Endgame. So 5 out of 10.
Mr. Rage Master.
I'm going to give it 0 whatever cat things because I couldn't stand that element. I'm going to use Kree Star Forges because I prefer that. That's how anti-cat thing, whatever. What was it called?
Flurkin.
Flurkin.
That's how anti-flurkin I am. So, I don't know. It's
how woke of
between
you?
Between 6 or 7. Brie Larson's axe to grind, like I said, it introduced a bitter root and it doesn't make you feel comfortable, even if it is justifiable agitation. It does give you a little bit of ugh. And in a superhero movie, I really want that. So that was half a point. That was it, a mere half a point. the bigger downer for me was the fact that, and okay, the other point that loses it, it was set in the 90s clearly as a nostalgia kick, and I'm really wishing we wouldn't do that, because aside from the fact it makes me feel old, could we stop revering the past? You know, it's like that Willy Wonka meme. Oh, you were born in 1992? Yes, please tell me how great it was to grow up in the 90s.
It was bad.
So, no, it wasn't bad, but it's just one of those.
If we didn't do nostalgia kicks, we'd never got films like The Sandlot.
I guess I'm just saying it once in a while is okay, but now it's turning into everything. So, look, I'm allowed to have an opinion, and I know I'm a hypocrite. We're all hypocrites. We're all cultists. So get over it.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, you're fine.
A lot of people are sick of the 80s and 90s nostalgia kick.
So
right,
yes,
it's so that lost a point. And the other one was just, like I said, my personal opinion about the story with the refugee crisis that they made. It was well done, but I personally would have rather seen the comic story. That's just a personal preference. And I keep having to say that because I'm expecting some kind of blowback. But so it gets about a 6 or 7. It wasn't bad. It was good. It was fun at times. It was a superhero film of good caliber, and I'd much rather watch that than Iron Man 3 by any day of the week. I'd much rather watch that than just about all of the DC movies, except for maybe Shazam. But at the end of the day,
Aquaman was pretty good.
Yeah, Aquaman was pretty good.
Aquaman,
but I kind of like
good.
You know, it's okay. Well, let's put it this way: Captain Marvel's neck and neck with Aquaman, which is
really
pretty good.
I kind of liked Aquaman better, but
neck and neck for me, because I'm also, that's just me. I mean, I'm also banking on the fact that DC's a chaotic mess right now.
Hey,
so,
everyone has their opinion.
And for me, True. That taints it. Plus, the battle at the end was way too CGI over the top, and it almost looked like some out of control video.
All right, now
game.
We're reviewing
so,
Aquaman.
Yeah, wait.
But
wait.
The point
we're
is
just reviewing Aquaman.
But so that's why I give it about a 6 or 7 Kree Star Forges.
Okay.
And depending on how I feel on the given day, if I wind up deciding to waste a lot of money and buy the Marvel movies on Blu-ray, would I buy this? Well, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Completionist sake.
Well, yeah, that, and I did like it. I mean, it would have to be completionist, because I did buy Iron Man 3 and I watched that one time. And when I watched it again, I was like, ugh, what was I thinking?
So overall, I think our opinion is it wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was okay.
I think it was good. Okay. You guys, it's a meh burger. Mark calls it a meh with cheese.
I gave it a 6 or a 7. I'm sorry. It got a C+.
Right. Okay, that's a meh burger with cheese. The cheese makes it a C+.
Okay, Scott, the A- enlightened.
I didn't call it an A-.
Well, I don't know, man.
Okay, fair enough. Overall,
a hamburger. We just have different degrees.
Yes.
Hamburger.
How good of a hamburger?
What grade do I have to tell you it was good? What do I have to say?
I think it was good, but. I think we know exactly what you said. You gave it a 7. I gave it a 7.5. It's a good movie. You thought it was okay. You thought it was a good movie.
Okay. At least we're on scale here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying anything bad. I'm just saying we all are equally saying this wasn't the best Marvel.
Yeah. We have different opinions on it. We're supposed to. And that's it for this week before this does go sideways. And it's long right now anyway, an hour and 18 minutes. So if you have comments, you can hit us up at ravinglunaticmedia.com. You can email us at contact@ravinglunaticmedia. I'm not sure that still works anymore anyway, though. Or you can tweet us on Twitter at @SciFiMalady. That's it for this week. Next week, the awesomeness that is Endgame.
Yeah.
Rage Master, what's left to do?
Stay sexy.
Next week on Comic Book Melody.